baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and you fill in the blank. Summer and Chevy go together like road trips and sunshine. Check out the full line of Chevy SUVs and trucks at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers today. Chevy, drive Chicago.
Good morning, Steve Dale on WGN Radio. And I am very excited because he's a very good friend and one of the smartest folks I know. And whenever I say that, I've got his wife poking me, saying, stop telling him that. His head is going to grow and grow and grow. But she's not here right now, so I could say it. He is the former chief medical officer at VetCor and formerly the chief scientific officer at the Every Cat Health Foundation, a member of the scientific review committee currently and formerly. And we're going to talk about what he did in Cyprus to help lead an initiative having to do with feline infectious peritonitis. Dr. Brian Holub, here is where we start. The FIP story could be, and I'm surprised it hasn't been, on Netflix, because there are more twists and turns, and we're about to add another, something we've learned recently that you're going to hear about later based on what we've learned from what has been going on in Cyprus or had been going on in Cyprus. But let's back up a little bit. FIP, feline infectious peritonitis, always thought to be, and in fact it was, fatal. But first of all, this is a disease that apparently took decades to even understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me. The FIP story goes way back. The Every Cat Health Foundation, formerly the Wynn Feline Foundation's initial grant, almost 60 years ago, was to help fund a research colony with Dr. Niels Petersen and to understand better FIP. And it's been a 50-year path that actually has led to a cure.
All right. You said cure. That's amazing. So we go from fatal to cure. We're not going to cover all those 60 years, but let's talk a little bit about where we were 50 or 60 years ago in not understanding the disease. So what, I guess the best way to ask that is, what have we learned that FIP or feline infectious peritonitis, what is it? And I think we can all understand better today because we're a bit familiar, unfortunately, in some ways, with coronaviruses.
Right. So coronaviruses have been around for a long time, obviously, eons, and affect many, many different species. In fact, there are different kinds of coronavirus. And the one that we've all suffered through with COVID pandemic is a little different version of coronavirus than the coronavirus that affects cats. So just to be technical for a microsecond, there are alpha coronaviridae and beta coronaviridae. And the cat is affected by an alpha coronaviridae. Now that affects mostly, unless it changes or escapes its normal path, mostly affects the intestinal tract. We call that enterocytes. Whereas the beta coronaviridae primarily affects the respiratory tract. And so we knew COVID was contagious by respiratory secretions. And that's because it's a different version of a coronavirus. Although both have some overlap, they are different classes of coronavirus. The alpha coronaviridae is the one that causes FIP. And most of the time, it's a relatively harmless virus. We almost don't care that it's around. But occasionally, it will change. It'll jump from a harmless little virus that barely even affects the intestinal tract to a very, very lethal disease that spreads through the whole body, causing fluid buildup in the chest and the abdomen, and it can spread to the eye and the brain and the heart and other parts of the body. And until 2019, was uncurable and rapidly fatal.
All right. So just to be clear, we're talking about cats here, not the human coronavirus. And these coronaviruses, okay, they impact cats. They're benign. and they do this mutation inside the cat. So I just want people to understand why it would take so long to figure out. I mean, who would think, Dr. Holub, that you have this benign virus that's doing nothing and maybe creating a loose stool, if that, and then inside the cat, in a way that I'm not even sure we understand to this day, does this mutation into an immune-mediated disease? Have I got that right? And I just want to make it clear that, okay, that is not something that scientists would necessarily expect.
Right. So it kind of has to be backwards engineering. So we knew the symptoms of the disease FIP. We knew what it presented like. But at first, I had no idea even what was causing it. Think back to the Dark Ages. So many people died of the Black Plague, not even knowing what bacteria were, until we figured out it was a little bacteria, Yersinia pestis. And then we invented antibiotics. And suddenly, what was a horrible, horrible thing for human beings became harmless. And that's kind of what happened with FIP. By investigating the cats that had the disease, eventually the coronavirus was identified as a common link. And mostly through the continued efforts of Dr. Niels Petersen and then other groundbreakers like Jared and Addy and on and on and on, many, many researchers, slowly through cat colonies, through cats being adopted into private homes and some of them then causing disease in those homes, but most of them not, we were able to figure out a whole lot about this puzzle. And many scientific papers later, we have a pretty clear idea of the biologic behavior of the coronavirus in the cat.
All right. So this thing occurs in cats. It wasn't easy to diagnose either. And again, without getting into the weeds, there are several kinds of FIP to make it even more complicated. And if you go back 20 years, even the kind of FIP, the wet FIP or effusive FIP, which you could explain in a moment, today, pretty easy to diagnose, wasn't even fully understood or as easy to diagnose, let alone other forms of FIP, Dr. Holub.
Yep, absolutely. So diagnosis is still today quite difficult, particularly in what we call the dry form. So there's a wet form. That was the common term for it. A better phrase would be effusive form. And that caused lots and lots of fluid very, very rapidly to build up in a body cavity. So for instance, in the belly, in the abdomen. So outside of the organs, but inside of the abdomen, fluid would build and build and build. And it would build pretty rapidly, often within 3 to 5 days. And most of those cats were dead within 8 days of diagnosis. And that was just tragic. But the dry form was even more insidious because no big fluid buildups often would affect the eye or the brain. Very hard to sacrifice an eye for a biopsy or take a brain biopsy without causing permanent damage. So the diagnosis was even more of an enigma. But we had tools and we had building blocks, kind of like building a brick wall. You need a whole lot of bricks to build the wall, but with the right kind of bricks, meaning certain diagnostic signs, you could build this explanation that really was hard to explain otherwise than with the diagnosis of FIP.
All right, we're going to build a bigger wall with more bricks and talk about what had been tried and where we succeeded and how we got there with FIP when we come back with Dr. Brian Holub on WGN. Dr. Brian Holub is with the Every Cat Health Foundation, which is greatly responsible for everything we know, I think, Dr. Holub, not only about FIP, but about you name the illness, you name the disease, you name a disease cats don't get even today. It's really all because of this organization, this nonprofit that funds cat health studies.
Yeah, Every Cat Health Foundation has been a leader in feline-specific research. Many years ago, not even that many years ago, cats were just kind of considered little dogs, which is absolutely not true. Many physiologic and biologic differences particularly the way diseases manifest, are clearly different between dogs and cats. And every Cat Health Foundation was focused on the cat. And with its leadership, I believe feline research has just moved to be on par with canine. Unfortunately, not as funded as canine research. More funding means more research and more cures. But FIP being a good example, with enough research and with enough time, the Every Cat Health Foundation has been able to steward exceptional studies and discoveries.
Yeah, and you would know because you were on the board of, or the scientific advisory board of the Canine Health Foundation for many years, and still the Every Cat Health Foundation, in fact, led that scientific review committee for several years. All right, so here's where we left off. We've identified FIP. We know what FIP is, some of the time anyway, in these cats. And in the meantime, there's no real treatment that can extend life. I mean, everything had been tried. I remember when a drug for muscular dystrophy in people was actually tried in cats. I remember when there was a vaccine to prevent the coronavirus, which would therefore prevent FIP from happening. That didn't work out so well. And I can go on and on and on, as can you. There was nothing that really did work, but it's not that scientists around the globe were not trying, Dr. Holub.
Absolutely. Every cat studied lots of theories that might perhaps have led to treatment, interferon, even anti-malaria medicines, and regrettably, none of them panned out. But as technology improved and other viruses were studied more aggressively, like HIV in humans, which has nothing to do with coronavirus, the science was advancing to perhaps be able to do something that has never been done, and that is to actually interfere with the virus's biology enough to cure viruses. And we are in a new age. Not only do we have antibiotics to cure bacterial infections, we are now in the age of antivirals. And Every Cat Health Foundation funded a study in 2016, 2017 that was published in 2019 to investigate some medications that had the potential to cure or at least slow down the disease, FIP. And lo and behold, magically, suddenly, we had a cure for FIP.
You know, Dr. Niels Petersen, who came to you and the other science advisors for dollars for a study, tried a drug. We'll talk about what that drug is in a little bit, that did not work very well for people with Ebola virus. It was just sitting on the shelves. And for whatever reason, he thought this drug is going to do it. He presented all the science that I wouldn't even try to repeat. And you and others who understand that science said, okay, this can make sense. But even Dr. Petersen has said to me, I was surprised it worked as well as it did. There were some side effects at first for some of the kittens. And by the way, we didn't mention that FIP can occur in cats and does of any age, but mostly occurs in kittens. And these kittens dying of this disease makes it even somehow more heartbreaking. But in any case, he was even surprised, Dr. Holub, at the success. And from there, this kind of took off, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the agent that was studied, a little different than remdesivir, but very similar, is called GS441524. And that agent was kind of sitting on the shelf. But the company, Gilead Sciences, had developed a different drug, which got the name, brand name, remdesivir. It was very similar. So remdesivir is a bigger molecule that then can be put into a human being or a cat or another animal. And the remdesivir then gets broken apart. And one of the parts that it breaks into is active, and that's called GS441524. but in humans, just trying to give the GS-4415-24 was not as successful as combining that agent with a couple other chemicals so it would be better absorbed, and then let the body break it down, and it would become as available. So the available product wasn't actually being used or marketed. So Gilead Sciences gave that along with a number of other agents to Dr. Peterson. And lo and behold, that agent could be given to cats, would be absorbed in cats, did not need to be in a bigger compound like remdesivir. And magically, above everybody's expectations, was wildly successful in not only arresting the disease, but reversing it. And I just said that many of these cats were dead within 8 days. I mean, you could catch them on the seventh of those 8 days and start the medication. And a miracle that you never thought could happen is that it would stabilize, it would reverse itself, and within weeks, the cat would be biologically and physiologically normal and healthy.
You know, you've been in veterinary medicine for more than a few years, and you'll tell me how many years. Is this the greatest breakthrough that you have witnessed or have been a part of in this case?
Yeah, there have been very few breakthroughs that you review everything that was ever written about it. And everything that was ever written about it says it's a fatal disease with no cure. And then overnight, you can cure that disease. I only know of maybe two others. One was a disease called hepatic lipidosis, where we just figured those cats were going to die because we studied every medicine until we found out all they needed was food. And once you feed that cat, the hepatic lipidosis can be reversed and the cat could live. That was a revelation. We had another thing called taurine responsive dilatative cardiomyopathy.
Yes.
A crazy scenario was discovered that it was from a nutrient deficiency in food, and magically taurine was added to cat food and that disease went away. And then this is the third disease that I really could put into that category, that everything you ever heard about it was written about, it said it was fatal, and magically it is no longer a fatal disease. I'd also like to mention all three of those diseases.
Okay, you said it. I've got to go, though, because we have to break for commercials. We'll be right back with Dr. Brian Holub. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN, back with you with Dr. Brian Holub, talking about the Every Cat Health Foundation. And you pointed out, when I rudely interrupted you, that really every monumental change that has occurred over the past nearly 60 years for cats has in one way, shape, or form come from this nonprofit organization. I apologize for stepping on your words, but you know, when you got a break for commercials, you got a break, Dr. Holub.
Absolutely. So the story goes on. So you said we were going to talk in this segment a little bit about this newest one that popped up in Cyprus.
Yes, we can. So there we are, minding our own business. I'm a part of the board of directors of Every Cat Health Foundation. That's why I said we. And then you hear about and then hear more. And, you know, the internet, things, it doesn't take long to reach people. And what we were hearing about is these cats allegedly passing away in big numbers on this little island called Cyprus in the Mediterranean, as a result of FIP, and it allegedly was supposed to be contagious in a way FIP typically was never thought to be. So I'll let you take the story from there and explain what I mean by contagious.
Yeah, it's a very important concept. So good news is, although we've learned things about this strain, good news is that it's knowledge that will help us better plan and advise on FIP outbreaks, but will wonderfully not, I believe, lead to pandemics and massive losses of cat life. But when it first hit Cyprus, we thought that might happen. We thought that this might be a new version we had never seen before, and that it was a version just like COVID that could spread across the globe and radically kill a lot of cats. So emergency funding was put into place and emergency studies were immediately launched, and many, many new biologic characteristics of coronavirus were identified. So the virus was named FCOV-23 because the outbreak happened in 2023. And as we started to study it, we started to understand that it was a type of coronavirus, a little different one, but a type of coronavirus that we've known about for a long time. There's type 1 and type 2 in cats. And type 1 is the one we thought that was affecting a lot of cats and it was killing a lot of cats. And we were thinking type 2s, although we could grow them in the lab very easily, really weren't affecting many cats. And we've kind of sat on that dogma for a long, long time. And lo and behold, FCOV-23 has now taught us a lot. So first off, FCOV-23 is a type 2 coronavirus. The very first type 2s became type 2s because the cat virus merged with a little canine coronavirus DNA, and it changed a little bit.
So
lots of versions of type 2.
So what you're saying is, for cat lovers, dogs are responsible for everything that happened on Cyprus?
No. Oh. I'm not saying that.
Oh.
But this dog virus was part of the problem. And so they found out that piece of that dog virus found its way into the feline virus. And so we named those type 2s. And lo and behold, that happened again, and it created this version of a type 2 called FCOV-23. Scary, though, because we never thought once a cat had the active biologic form that caused disease and death, called FIP, could be directly contagious between cats. And the type 2 version, particularly the FCOV-23, we know can be contagious directly between cats. The beautiful thing about it is, although it was contagious between cats, although a lot of cats got affected suddenly, and a whole bunch got affected, and many died, but many were treated, it just as rapidly kind of ran its course and went away. So it was not a pandemic. It was what we call an endemic. It only happened in one small endemic area. It didn't even become an epidemic. It just remained localized to this kind of single outbreak. And we now know that's happened many times probably in the past with type 2s, because Dr. Gary Whitaker at Cornell has been able to catalog a lot of those type 2s. And through his more recent analysis, feels that may have been the case for other little endemics that came and went, did not spread across the globe, and caused, sadly, an endemic of feline deaths. But today, if that were to happen, we could just treat it and they would all get better.
Yeah, that's the best part of the news. But does this explain why, on occasion, animal shelters, catteries, those who breed cats, would report, this is not supposed to be contagious, but I had 6 cats and they're all gone. They're all dead. You know, does this explain what might have happened in those cases, which never before could be explained?
Yeah, that's the rationale at this point. We need to research it, could have. So that's a hypothesis. But that's a very reasonable hypothesis, knowing what we know now. And the good news is, even the type 2s, even the ones that are endemic, are wonderfully responsive to not only GS-44-1524, but to a lot of other medicines like molnupiravir and even Paxlovid that will cure that disease.
All right. So when we come back, I want to talk about curing. You used the cure word. Amazing. It is amazing. And you called it a miracle earlier yourself. So we'll talk about some of those medications, where they might be available, where you should not, and there is an answer to this, purchase those medications. And then we will have time to tell an amazing story about how cats and Dr. Holub and the Every Cat Health Foundation, as well as Dr. Niels Peterson, have saved human lives. We'll do all that when we come back on WGN. Dr. Brian Holub is retired chief veterinary officer at VetCor, and more importantly for this conversation, led an initiative to understand what was going on in Cyprus, worked with researchers to do that as we're talking about feline infectious peritonitis. What was going on there was called FCOV23, and we explained a bit about how that's different and very much the same. The question is now, Dr. Holub, and you mentioned that it really doesn't matter in many ways if you can catch it and understand and identify that the kitten or cat has FIP, it doesn't matter about the strain. The kitten can be treated. Now, it wasn't all that long ago where the only options for treatment, you had to go online to the so-called black market and use these injections with these giant needles. And it saved countless cat lives, and organizations help people to do that, which is terrific. But do we need to do that today?
So, fantastic network of private citizens, because veterinarians could not break the law and get black market drugs, came to be that we are so grateful for, and actually bridged this wonderful gap between when we knew we had a cure until we could actually get the medicine here in the United States. And so that gap was 5 years. That was from 2019 to 2024. And I'm so grateful for that network of heroes that saved so many cats.
And they were heroes, and those products worked. However, there were disadvantages of doing it that way. And now we don't need to do that anymore, Dr. Holub?
We do not. They were highly acidic injections that actually caused severe skin reactions and pain. But if the option is death, you use them. But that was the only way it was stable. But we now have fantastically legal, available versions of that medicine. And not only is it legal and available, it's not an injection anymore. It's a pill. So the FDA decided on June 1st, 2024, that they would use something called Guidance for Industry number 256 that gave FDA enforcement discretion, which means that FDA could allow, and they have allowed this medicine to be used in the United States. So the first was Stokes Pharmacy. And very rapidly, we were able to roll out an injectable version of the medicine. And soon after, we're able to roll out an oral version of the medicine. And today, I would highly encourage everybody who's treating coronavirus, FIP, to use the pills. There are some very, very rare instances that we might want to still give an injection, and we can use remdesivir as an injectable. It's better than the old black market drugs that were given under the skin. But it's incredibly rare that we need to do that to save a cat's life. We can just start the pills, and we can cure it. And those pills are available by a huge number of pharmacies. Stokes was number one, but Wedgewood Pharmacy, BCP Veterinary Pharmacy, Aviro Pharmacy, Las Colinas Pharmacy, Mix Lab, SVP, Wooddale Pharmacy, Ethos Pet Rx, many, many companies are now making a legal and effective version of pills that will cure FIP and other agents as well, like some EIDD drugs and molnupiravir. So,
and your veterinarian,
Your veterinarian will be able to source the medication, and the key is to start the medicine that day or the next day. You can't wait. but it is very available, and we absolutely can cure the disease in most cases.
Would you encourage veterinarians to carry this stuff? And here's why, or at least some of it, you know, to get people started. Because what you just said is so true. The key is starting immediately once FIP is positively identified. So waiting 3 days till you get something in the mail, that's not going to do the trick.
Yes, I would, although I believe the number is 7 states have rules that disallow compounded medicines to be kept as what's known as a hospital stock supply. So those 7 states battle how to deal with this law that really is inappropriate for this specific medication. Those states and the pharmacies are working through that.
Yeah,
the other 53 states, 43 states, have no issue. Hospitals can keep a stock supply, and they may only need to keep a 2 or 3 day supply, because within 2 or 3 days, the pharmacies can overnight the medicine to those hospitals and replace the stock supply and give enough for the remainder of the treatment. Used to be, we think it was a longer treatment, 12 weeks, 84 days. But recent data shows that many, many, many cases, and we might soon be able to say most cases, can effectively be treated in half that time, 42 days, 6 weeks, which that means much less expense and just as much cure.
All right. So Illinois, by the way, you are free to use the compounded products. The same, I believe, Indiana, Wisconsin, the states that are nearest and most likely listened to on WGN. But we do have listeners, you're right, from all over the country and, in fact, all over the world. We only have 1.5 minutes here to talk about this story. I will let you tell it. It is a One Health cat story. Because of cats, Dr. Peterson, and the Every Cat Health Foundation, including yourself, human lives have been saved.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful that Dr. Peterson in 2016, 17, and 18 studied GS-44-15-24, because when our COVID epidemic hit, suddenly a drug that had been developed for Ebola virus, remdesivir, just sitting on the shelves, not being sold or used, suddenly seemed to make sense that it could work and should work for coronaviruses. So lo and behold, because veterinarians had done research on this agent and had success in cats, off the shelves remdesivir came. It was quickly studied against the SARS-CoV-2 virus and COVID-19. And spectacularly, it had not as thorough and aggressive as a benefit to people, but a benefit just the same, and in many, many cases saved many, many, many hundreds of thousands of lives by making it less virulent.
So thank your cat for what we now have to treat COVID-19 that's still being used. Dr. Brian Holub, thank you so much. To learn more about all this or Every Cat Health Foundation, and or to sign up for the free newsletter, everycat.org. Dr. Holub, always a learning experience speaking with you. We all just went to school. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Glad to do it.
So we've been talking about chronic kidney disease in cats, or kidney insufficiency. It's come up a couple of times over the past month on this very radio show. And what's been asked of me and what I have talked about is, okay, how can you not treat, how can you prevent it from happening in the first place? And actually, no one knows the answer to that question for sure. But we do know that hydration makes a difference. Now, I don't want to get into dry food, moist food, which should I feed my cat, or maybe the pate food that's very fancy. What's the right thing? Well, I will leave that up to you and your veterinarian. But I do know this. Some water, H2O, hydration, is really important for cats. It is for us. It is for dogs. And the hype is that cats, they evolved from desert animals originally. They don't need water. Well, they tend not to want to drink it, but it doesn't mean they don't need it. They do need it. And what I suggest that people do first, No matter what you feed your cat, make sure that moist food, for other reasons as well, is a part of the picture. Now, it can only be a quarter of what you feed. It can be all of what you feed. Again, I will leave that up to you and your veterinarian. But I want it to be, I hope it is, a part of the picture. But you can also add water. Don't drown the food so you've got kibble and you're adding 3 cups of water to a couple of spoonfuls of kibble and you make it soupy. No, that's not appealing. I like soup. Cats, maybe not so much. But a little bit of water every day, even to moist food, that actually can make a difference. Make water available. And again, well, my cat doesn't like drinking water. Part of the answer might be location, location, location. If there are other cats, or for that matter, there's a dog or two at home, you have to have the water bowls spread around the house in different. How many water bowls do you need? I don't know. Science hasn't yet answered that question. But here's what I go by. Same as the number of litter boxes, huh? Well, the number of litter boxes is have as many litter boxes plus one as you have cats. So if you have 2 cats, 3 boxes. If you have 3 cats, 4 boxes, etc. Well, that's what I say for water bowls as well. But water bowls just sitting there, make sure the water is fresh. Make sure it's changed at least once a day. And some cats like those drinking fountains as well. What's more, there's a product out called Purina HydraCare. It's a nutrient-enriched liquid supplement that is formulated to encourage cats to drink more that you can ask your veterinarian about. If you have a pet, and I'm thinking if you're listening to the show, you might, or at least might know someone who does, odds are statistically, that dog or cat may be overweight or obese. We're talking about more than half of all dogs and about 60%, also more than half, of all cats are overweight or obese. But why is that? It's more than just we're feeding them too much or we're giving them too much table food. You can go to WGNradio.com and hear the conversation I had with Dr. Ernie Ward of the Association for Pet Obesity Prevention with a new perspective on why so many cats are overweight or obese and drugs that are just around the corner, the GLP-1 drugs for pets. Yes, that is a real possibility. All of our past shows at WGNradio.com. Just look for Steve Dale's Pet World, where we are on bright and early, and we'll talk to you next week.